Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.
It's March 29th, 2016, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always...
naked.
And we're coming from the Los Gatos Hills of California, and we're happy to be coming there, too. And my name is Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider, at least I think I am. But what do I know?
Well, we want to welcome you to our home here at Lupin Lodge. We're going to have some conversation tonight about the human condition, and even better, what to make of it. And we're going to sprinkle it with what,
Rochelle? Laughter,
Oh. Good
music, and hopefully, no. Definitely a few surprises.
Yeah, we hope to be surprised. That's part of what we're in it for, besides the big bucks. Our show is sponsored by Go Raw, 100% raw food. Tastes good, good for you. And
Universe Spirit, awakening us to the impact of climate destabilization and how we can make a difference.
But then again, what do I know? That's the subject of tonight's program. What do I know? Every week we audition many phrases before we pick the guest phrase of the week. It's an open audition. Any phrase is welcome to try out. Recently we auditioned You Betcha, Probably, and You Mean It, and several others. But this week's winner is What Do I Know? Now, before we select our champ, we put each candidate through a vigorous vetting to see how they hold up under fire, how useful they are, and if they have a dark past we should be aware of. Like, did you know that You Betcha was extensively used by both Mussolini and Attila the Hun? Talk about dark past. But tonight's phrase, what do I know, it just really stood out, especially in the category of how to diffuse spousal irritation. When Rochelle or I are tempted to inflict our version of reality on each other, we've been trying out the phrase, what do I know? Not only does it keep us humble, but it diffuses self-righteous indignation and the wear and tear on our ego defense systems. Although when I think about it, the more worn and torn they are, it's probably better, but we'll get into that later. In spite of our desire to be all-knowing and to share perspectives in our conversation with you about the things we think we know, ultimately, we are left with what is most likely the truth of our situation. But then, what do I know? Tonight, we'd like to see if we could actually get to knowing or find hope to know or maybe even will know or at least laugh at some of our pretensions to knowing. Maybe we'll even find the peace that passeth all knowing. Expect some of our characters to weigh in and try their best at knowing. Who knows? You may come away from tonight's conversation knowing something that you didn't know that you knew. But hey, what do I know?
I once heard, the more we know, the more there is to know. Our very awareness of the enormity of all there is to know is eye-opening, mind-bending. To grasp a minuscule crumb of knowing is such a tease of more. I am humbled by my knowledge. What do I know?
That's where you ended up.
That's right.
It's like ending up at a big question mark. Can't you see all these people like, okay, what's going to be the end? After all our searching, et cetera, and they walk up and there's this huge question mark. And out of the question mark, these fingers descend. And they're the fingers that are aiming. Come this way. I wish I could show you. What is my finger doing, Rochelle? How would you describe this finger gesture?
It's beckoning to me.
Come on into the question where we're liable to find perplexity and befuddlement. It is beckoning to both of us.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started what I came to call my spiritual journey, I remember reading a line that said, be willing to throw out everything you've ever learned at any given point in time for an entirely new frame of reference, perspective, understanding, lack of understanding.
It's hard to do sometimes because I get attached to the things that I think I know. They define me. And giving them up begins to frighten me because I think I won't be there anymore if I give up these thoughts, these ideas, this font of knowledge I have accumulated over these many years. But I'm willing. I don't feel capable sometimes, but I'm always willing to let go because I know that ultimately I have to do that. And if I know nothing else, I know that we are going to die. What it looks like, what's beyond it, that's beside the point. These bodies are going to reach a point of total deterioration in dust.
Well, at the risk of getting heavily sibilic.
What's sibilic mean?
Lots of syllables. I'm going to use words, multi-syllables, which is now called sibilic. So if someone comes up to you and says, you know, you're not sibilic enough. And you go, huh?
That's so, definitely not sibilic.
So this is a perspective from the Urantia book. It's about conceptual frames and our relative knowing of anything. And it says this, partial, incomplete, and evolving intellects would be helpless in the master universe, would be unable to form the first rational thought pattern, were it not for the innate ability of all mind, high or low, to form a universe frame in which to think. If mind cannot fathom conclusions, if it cannot penetrate to true origins, then will such mind unfailingly postulate conclusions and invent origins, that it may have a means of logical thought within the frame of these mind-created postulates. And while such universe frames for creature thought are indispensable to rational intellectual operations, they are, without exception, erroneous to a greater or lesser degree. These frames of reference, they're just temporary scaffolding. So come on board the scaffold. I know it looks kind of wobbly, and there's no walls in the scaffolding of the temporary frame of reference in which we are looking at our lives.
But the more we hold on to that, the more we have the illusion that they do have walls, that they are there for us, that it feels safe and secure, even though it's scaffolding.
Which makes me wonder about the unendingness, the ever-expanding infinite. There's no walls in the infinite.
That's why people are so afraid of it.
Right. Where's the walls? Guy walks into the infinite store and comes up to the salesman and says, hey, where's the walls?
Yeah. Welcome to the infinite store.
But the beauty about the infinite, it's another syllabic word, is universe potentiality. In other words, we enter into this phenomenon, which is absolute potentiality, the universe, but it's really a dynamic, it's evolution, it's this unfolding of life, multi-variegated forms. Oh, I love being able to use that many syllables in one word.
Variegated?
That is so good. And be able to know that I can reach into that infinite potential and grab my hand around something and bring something to life out of that act of will and energy and intent and imagination.
I'm going to challenge you right now. When you walk into the infinite, you can't bring it back to the finite.
Well, what do I know?
You can't do it. They don't fit because it's so much bigger than that which you've got. Your framework is so small. I'm so aware that when I move into the place that I call fear, resistance of something or someone, I stop the progress. I stop moving into the spiralatic. How's that for a word?
Spiralatic. Man, that's good.
Spiralatic.
That's really good. Oh.
Suction of the universe.
Sucking spiralatic, sensual, sentient beings.
Right. The trick for me is to constantly go beyond these places that get me stuck by just embracing them, moving into them, or whatever technique you want to use that allows you to embrace it so you get unstuck. And when you get unstuck, you can almost feel that suction. Almost feel it drawing you into the moreness.
Being sucked into the moreness. I love that. I'm going to clarify my remark. What I meant by you reach in, you don't pull the infinite out. What you do is you get to pull a little piece of it, a little energy, mind, will combo that you can then shape into something.
It's like a trailer?
Yeah, it's a trailer. Like a movie trailer?
The infinite trailer. Tonight we will present the trailer of the infinite.
Yeah, these are basically trailers. But then again, what do I know?
Purple rain came on today. Why can't I turn off that song? A simple melody. The lyrics don't make sense to me. But I always sing along. I don't know how fast this star falls. What it feels like to have.
That was Monique Luwalahati. Forgive my pronunciation, Monique. She said, okay. And singing with her, David DiMuzio. We were meant to meet. You know what that brings up? What I think is most fundamental. In the moments when I think I'm getting really close to knowing, this thought just comes surging forth. It has to do with what Martin Buber said, which is all real living is meeting. Oh, Professor, did you want to jump in on this?
Of course I do. This is one of my most favorite, blessed statements. All real living is meeting. Believe it or not, everyone wants to be met. The immaturity and the disease of the mind and the conditioning often precludes them being met because they go about it in such abysmal ways. I shouldn't judge it like that. I take back the word abysmal. That's a symbolic word like you were talking about. Far too many syllables. People need to and really want to be able to be met, but they go about it by, for example, thinking being met is more. If I have more of this and more of that, then I'll be more met. More to eat, more to drink, more to gamble away, etc. The reality is, my dear Rochelle, as you know so well, that people really want to be recognized for who they are. But yet we're afraid to drop the shells that would allow for the recognition, because we're afraid that what they will see will not be very appealing, at the very least, and actually gross and ugly at the worst. So we don't do the very thing that we most want to do, which is to reveal ourselves, to be met in the revelation.
I like that. If you were listening, Professor, the song that Errol played had this line in it that said that I am a testimony to what I know. I realize I stand before you filled with what I know now, willing to move beyond it, constantly being filled with what I know. What I know. I know. Know.
How does the knowing get transferred or translated into substance? For example, the body has these little cells called mitochondria. We had a couple of mitochondria come over the other night for dinner.
They did. If they were people, yes.
No, they were inside me waiting for dinner because their job is to literally take the food, some broken down piece of it, and turn it into energy. When I think about thought, what does it take to turn thought into energy, into action, will, manifestation? That to me is something to be considered. The more we can know about it, the less we'll say, what do I know?
Now, they're very interesting, the word know. I'm realizing knowing, knowledge, it's an accumulation of facts, but it's also an accumulation of feelings and sensory experiences. We go through life, if we think of ourselves as a magnet, but turned in the way that we attract things to us. So we're constantly attracting things that fit us, that work for us, that build us, make us bigger and more appealing in a
more
way.
More of us to be met.
More of us to be met. We can't help it even. The more conscious we become, the more conscious our choices are what to attract. We make decisions about what we want to attract the more conscious we are.
Hi, this is Barney. I've been thinking just about this here very same thing about attracting to you what you want and the whole thing about meeting. And I see these guys walking around the neighborhood, you know, and they're like showing off and they got their study outfits on and they put the bills and the wads of money in their pockets and this, that, and the other. I knew a fellow once, he had one of these Viper cars. Viper is a very expensive 10-cylinder car made by the Viper people. Anyway, we found out about the Viper. It's 10 cylinders. That means it's stretching way out in front of you, like so far you can't even see the end. When we got into that car, we realized it was only for little guys. A big guy couldn't drive that car. He had to drive it hunched over. And so we realized that Viper has a kind of a substitute penis. An elongated version of your manly self that people was trying to prove. And when we drove it around, we would pull into a gas station. It was like a magnet. These guys would come over to that thing. You could almost feel them getting hard, excuse my language, but they were so like turned on to this machine. My point being is that we have all these ways we try and impress or expand ourselves out and be something. But
What I tell people? How do you know you're not already something? And it would take a lot of stress off your life if you could just relax. But then, what do I know?
That's it. What do we know? We know something. We know this tiny, minuscule, something. Because we're on a journey to knowing. We're on a journey to expanding that consciousness. Some people think, well, we've been many journeys to get to this point. But if this is the starting gate, I see people around me all day long making decisions that are just purely survival-led. They're not decisions to expand consciousness.
And in fairness to the knowing, we know a lot of stuff. We know how to make stuff. We know how to solve problems. We know how to turn the water on and watch another baby granddaughter go from having no control over her limbs to now she's a toddler. Unbelievable. She actually puts one foot in front of the other.
And picks things up and puts them down and puts her hands around things, which you couldn't do at one point.
That's right. Where her hand is aimed, so she knows how to aim her hand to the object and how to compress those fingers around it. It wasn't very long ago that she didn't know how to do that.
I know. It's really amazing. More than anything, having a grandchild, I don't know why we have the same experience with our children. We're watching them. But we're so mindful that we're watching. We have a different relationship with them. That's all it is. I think grandparents are a little freer to watch, to be observant, rather than to interact.
We don't have the weight of that responsibility. Right, Rabbi Greenberg? That's right. A grandparent is a good thing to be. It's a compensation for getting old and if you're unfortunate, senile and decrepit. But let's not go there. But it is a compensation for the getting old, where you're not able to do what it is you'd like to do before with all the energy and physicality and everything. But you have the grandchildren. All of a sudden, the universe takes on a special luster. I love that. You're seeing the lusterful being that is your grandchild, and you want to kiss the luster. And guess what? The luster wants to kiss you back. It just doesn't know it yet. But if you hang in there and you cherish each thing, and so the place to get is for everything, especially your experience, you treat like a grandfather would treat a grandchild. So you're having all these experiences? Think of you looking at your experience like a grandfather. You're looking at you having this experience. And when you step into that perspective, you get a little peek of what it's like for the all-knowing one who likes to look at it. But he likes to look at it fresh, with no additives. So that's the thing. Don't put additives in your experience from the past, what you think you knew then, because you may not know it. But then, you don't have to listen to me after all. What do I know?
You know what you know, but what do I know? We just constantly have to let go of the second before and trust that if there's any juice or richness in that second, we'll carry it with us. We don't carry it with us because it defines us. We carry it with us because it is us.
But one of the questions I ask, and it's a big part of this process that we've undertaken, which is to see if we could get in touch with the sacred, the holy, and then to ask ourselves, what do we know of holy?
A thousand times I've tried to hear from heaven, but I talk the whole time. I think I made you too small. I've never feared you at all. No, if you touch my face, would I know you? I looked into my eyes. Could I behold you?
What do I know of you? Who spoke me into motion? Where have I even stood but the soil along your ocean? Are you fire? Are you fury? Are you sacred? Are you beautiful? So what do I know? What do I know of holy? I guess I thought that I had figured you out. I knew all the stories, and I learned to talk about how you were mighty to save. But those were only empty words on a page. Then I caught a glimpse of who you might be. The slightest hint of you brought me down to my knees. So what do I know of you? Who spoke? Where have I even stood but the shore along your ocean? Are you fire? Are you fury? Are you sacred? Are you beautiful? So what do I know? What do I know of holy?
What Do I Know of Holy by Addison Road, R-O-A-D.
Like I wrote.
She raises some really good questions. What do I know of you? Spoke me into motion. I love that image. Spoke me into motion.
Mm-hmm.
Where have I even stood but the shore along your ocean? Are you fire? Are you fury? Are you sacred? Are you beautiful? What do I know of holy? And she goes on to say, what do I know of wounds that will heal my shame? See, that's a big issue for many of us, is that shame. We were talking a little bit earlier about we want to be seen, but we're afraid to expose ourselves.
The self that we're afraid to expose is the self that is being shaped by society, which tells you that the self that you are is not really acceptable, because you need to hold it back. You have to rein it in like a horse that wants to gallop. The society only wants you to prance, you know, and you have to hold yourself back like that. So if you utter or give voice to or give feeling to that which you truly are, there's the shame of not being accepted.
Or the fact that they might just shoot you down, because we live in this thicket of bias and prejudice. Imagine there are different vines with prickly vines, and one of them's bias, the other's prejudice, the other is toxic perception. Another vine that mixed in with this is judgment designed to make you feel awful.
It's all about being different than me. All those things that you said are triggered by the fact that you're different than I am. And we are so immature that we don't see that a difference isn't threatening, that a difference can make me stronger, more wonderful. I look at a picture of our granddaughter, and she has an Asian mother and a Caucasian father. And this child is that blend. And she's absolutely beautiful. The fullness of these two cultures, these two races of human beings, have merged into this child. And we're terrified of that for the most part. We don't want to merge. We think we'll be obliterated.
We think we'll be erased.
Exactly, erased.
If we don't hang on to our race position, they'll come along and erase us.
That's right. The race won't be there anymore. That's really intolerable, not being there. That's the whole crux of all our fears, that we will cease to be.
But it's not obvious.
It's not obvious in terms of our view of it because we can't see it. But it's so obvious when you talk about it. Oh, of course we're afraid of, everybody knows that. But inside us, when we're walking around the street, it's not obvious at all.
We're caught up in the day-by-day phenomenon. Let's face it, 90% of us, 95% of our time is dealing with just what's in front of you and what the body's pointing to and what the mind is conjecturing.
Which is how it should be.
That's our job.
It's the job of the body is to deal with what's in front of it.
But when we add that extra perspective of the experiencer of our experience. Oh, Professor Schnitzel, you want to talk about the experiencer of our experience?
Oh, yeah. I've met the experiencer of our experience personally and intimately, and he is available. I have his call line. And you can call anytime you want, and all you have to do is press the button that's inside your mind, which is the stop button. Yeah, you stop making assessments about what you are experiencing, and like a guest who's come to the door, you're invited in, and he comes in and says, let me have a look. That's what it's like to be able to allow the infinite, or from the scientific point of view, which is my field, you want to look at it and see it innocently so that you can see what else it might do, what it's doing when you're busy and not paying attention to it. So you're able to see each thing manifesting like that for you. If you asked each thing about itself, I would guess that each of them would say their version of, what do I know?
Professor, sometimes you have to follow you with a laser light to make sure I don't get lost.
I'm lost all the time inside myself. And I spend most of my time trying to find myself. Like Earl, who's always losing things, I'm losing myself. And so I wander around all day long, and once in a while I pick out, and there I am, having the experience of myself having an experience. Oh, and I go, I found myself. But then as soon as I become self-conscious, then I found myself. I'm lost again, and off I go, looking.
I would have to agree with that very much. I did follow you.
Yeah, you followed me very good. Not everyone can follow me, and they shouldn't follow me. Why should they follow me? Because, well, what do I know? All I can give them is my sense of what I think it is, when they have their sense. And it goes back to something very basic. Does it feel good? Or does it not feel good? If it doesn't feel good, chances are good that it's not something you want to know more about. Don't go that way.
I like that one. If it doesn't feel good, chances are you don't want to know more about it.
But the feel good, see, if you follow the feel good on the universe, for example, I give you a wonderful feel good that's not only a feel good, but it's a mathematical feel good. And that's music. Very mathematical music, and yet it creates this phenomenon that we feel it penetrates us. That's why it's so important to listen to music and feel what it says to us, which is why on this program, Errol likes to give you a sense of feeling the music. The music, of course, is in time. And the one thing we don't know, who knows where the time goes.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving. Oh, but then you know it was time for them to go. Ooh.
Knows Where the Time Goes. That was Eva Cassidy, one of our favorites. We're always happy to feature Eva on our program.
I was just thinking of the questions that we can ask in our innocence, like, why is the sky blue? Why do birds fly? Why can't we fly? The things that you may ask when you're very young and you're seeing all this phenomenon and want to know how come it happens. How come you're left out? I wanted to fly when I was little. Who knows? We don't know these things. And yet there are, in truth, there are answers to them. They may not be acceptable answers, but there are answers.
This phenomenon of curiosity was built into us, and it's something we share with the animals. I know many a cat that was killed by curiosity.
Really?
Yeah, three white ones, two of those tabby ones, a couple long-haired ones.
Well, we had cats. I don't know if they died of curiosity or the predator was more curious than they were.
I think the predator was thinking, I'm curious to know what that animal would taste like.
Yes,
let's find out.
I am a very curious person. But you have the ability to make me crazy because sometimes you won't finish a sentence, and then I'm so curious to know what you were talking about.
Yeah, like the last time, remember we were talking about this, and I was, can't remember.
Oh, there you go. Shoot him now. I met this young woman the other day, and I started to say something to her, and I said, oh, forget about it. She says, I don't want to forget about it. Tell me. I said, oh, my God, I met another curious person that I have to deal with and see myself.
I watch Rochelle whip through novels because she's so curious. What's going to happen next?
Exactly. I'll watch bad movies because maybe... How will they end? Will they just keep being bad, or will there be a kernel of wonderful in there somewhere?
Well, let's hope it doesn't kill you. Or maybe it would be a good thing to kill you. Now that I think about it.
I beg your pardon?
To die of curiosity would be a great way to go.
But what do I know?
No, what do I know? I'm the one who said it.
I didn't want to know that.
You know who knows about not knowing, and I'd like to ask him if he'd come in and share some of his perspective, is Father O'Malley. Father. Oh, good evening, Errol and Rochelle. It's always delightful to be here and tell you what I don't know. What I don't know can fill up the entire universe, quite frankly, except for maybe a tiny, tiny little bit over here where I know, which is how to put one leg in front of the other and get along down the road. Certain things there, of course. Now, we're just all kidding aside. Even though I know kidding doesn't like to be put aside, kidding likes to be right up front in front of everybody and making a nuisance of himself. But, kidding, we're going to put you aside here just for a minute because we're going to be talking about knowing and what you can know. And I want to go back to that song you were playing there about meat. She knows that we would meet. That's kind of a different way of looking at faith, isn't it? You know you'll be met. You know it somewhere, somehow. And if you take all the forms and the images off of it, that's the risk you got to take there. You have to be willing to take the images off of what it is you think you know you want. Because you can know in a way that the mind can't go with you there. Do you ever notice that? There's a kind of a knowing that's beyond the knowing of the mind. Maybe that's the one that passeth that knowing, the peace there that it is, and that's what we're offered as we walk in the walk of a greater and expanding consciousness. But then, what do I know?
Everyone has been paid to finish whatever they have to say tonight, but what do I know? They're doing a great job of it.
Well, it's true there. I mean, you say certain things, like we're all talking here and you're all listening out there and down Insight Out, the Naked Truth. Can I put in a plug for your sponsor here, Rochelle? Go Raw and Universe Spirit. I mean, those are two companies that really stepped up to the plate here, supporting their own Rochelle, poor pathetic beings that they are.
Oh, thank you, Father O'Malley, but what do I know?
Well, you know, I'm just teasing you, darling. You're not pathetic.
Oh, you're funny tonight, Father.
it's important that you feel like you're met. That's kind of how you want to feel there. Having someone sponsor you is like someone saying, "Oh, I believe in what you stand for. But then, by the way, if you don't mind mentioning it a little bit about what I stand for," and in this case, we are proud to be able to say that the Go Raw, right there, Errol? Yeah, yeah, of course, Go Raw. Go, yeah, Raw. Well, the Go Raw has provided something that's so righteous for the digestive system. The mitochondria. The mitochondria, they'll just go nuts over that Go Raw. They'll go like, "Oh, this is easy to convert this stuff to energy." They love it. And of course, what about universe spirit there, darling? I know you know them and what they're doing.
They provide a lot of research that has gone into why our climate is destabilizing and what can we do about it. Another part of the research, it's one thing to say, "Oh, this is happening," but people feel helpless, and it's why they don't want to talk about it. Because what can you do? Okay, recycle. But it doesn't feel like a lot happens with recycling. I mean, well, it does, but I mean, you're not seeing it right away. So learning what you can do, I mean, learning what's possible to be done at all in terms of our own being, how we take knowledge and grow from it.
This is Senator Beauregard, and I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've been thinking about the impending and imminent problems that we're all facing. These fellows here and there in this country, but especially over there in certain parts of the country, they're just going after each other like they are just maximally different enough to justify killing each other, killing the children. So there you have that problem, and then you've got all these other divisiveness problems. And I think about that, and so I ask myself the question, what's it going to take to get from here to there? How does someone who starts off from a position of complete alienation and hatred move from that position toward recognizing the value of the other fella and eventually coming into cooperative relationship with him? What is the first step that someone would be taking to get started on that journey? And how is that step taken? And how can we, as, let's say, our government, here we got this big election coming up here now, and what can the government do to make a difference? We were talking about Teddy Roosevelt. He really felt that government had a job to step in. I mean, right at that time in history, if you'll remember, was they broke up these trusts. He was largely responsible for the antitrust legislation, these big monopolies that were controlling everything. And if you let them, they will take control. Just ask that 1%. They're happy to be the 1%, by the way. They don't have any complaints about it. They like it. And they're happy when the 99% knows that they're the 1%, and they get to see what it's all about. After all, what is politics anyway? It's just about who gets to decide. But then, what do I know?
I think very often of people who are imprisoned for not complying to a certain standard that they're supposed to comply to. There you are, you know, you're locked away not to interact with this world, but you're interacting with something else. And I think it was Bernard Malamud who wrote a book called The Fixer. This man was imprisoned, and he really did receive enlightenment, find true freedom in this incarceration, because he came to know himself fully, because there was no distractions. That's an important thing. Oh, well, what do I know?
Well, wait a minute. You were on a roll. What was the one important things that you were going to say?
We started to talk about it a little bit, you know, how difference really scares us for the most part. And if you think of the terrorism, which is a way that people are eradicating all those who are not like them, really the most extreme way of dealing with differences. You're not like me, boom, you're dead. And what's the other thing? The justification for it, why they're not like them. Hitler did it with the Jews. There are sects constantly eradicating each other, genocide that took place in Africa, one tribe against another tribe of people. It's constant because we're so terrified of differences.
But it raises the question for me, what do I know? Well, then, who knows?
Suppose I'm pleased the sunshine, rivers and trees. Really.
When me see Jah, me see a way. Drastically stray from hypocrisy, I say, hey. Every man to them own a philosophy. I live the proper way and then me read a chapter daily. Man, they in a city hungry and no eat. And food they down a country, does a drop off of the tree then. You see, say poverty no real then. Is what the reason revealing.
To my friends and foes, and I suppose I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies. I provide all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers and trees, green leaves. Yeah.
When the rain pits up at the roof, herb just a steam pepper pot on the stew. Life is a dream if you got gratitude. So go tell the regime them can't stop where we do now. Information you think on your own, or else you're a slave to the things that you know. What do you know if you learn every day? So be careful of things where you say.
Who knows, who knows, who knows, who knows. I just go where the trading blows, sending love to my friends and foes.
Hello.
And I suppose
Hello.
I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies.
Oh,
to provide all my wants and needs. The sunshine, rivers and trees, green leaves.
Africa in our soul, but a Jah in our heart. It is of importance for I and I gather. If we cannot show now a balance that we had, how do we propose then to carry it abroad? Then I go to Ethiopia and you not have a plan. The building of a nation and a helper and every one a lover, one a man is just a man. It shall be a coronation when we land, land, land.
Who knows? And that was Protégé. Jah knows. They were singing about Jah. That's the name for God. Jah. Oh. I don't know if you can make out some of the lyrics, but they're worth making out. Speaking of meeting, I loved making out. Didn't you, Rochelle?
Absolutely. I love making out with you.
Ooh, wow.
I'm sorry, okay, everybody.
Close your eyes. When me see Jah, me see a way, drastically stray from hypocrisy, I say, every man to their own philosophy, I say, I live the proper way, and then me read a chapter a day. Man, day in a city hungry and eat, you say poverty, but then what do I know? I don't know what he's talking about there.
You do in many ways. I love the fact that we all have a perspective. And that's part of the differences. If you look at anything, it's made up of so many different components. It's not just a thing. It's got little atoms and running around and little other things. Whatever it is that you're looking at that is finite and alive, it's got all that stuff going on. And so to hold that, to realize that I can see one tiny, tiny, tiny little thing in that.
That was a three tiny little thing, by the way, folks, in case you weren't counting. Some of the other lyrics here. Life is a dream if you got gratitude. Maybe we should cover that some way. Go tell the regime, dem can't stop, we do now. Information you think on your own, or else you're a slave to the things that you know. What do you know if you learn every day? So be careful of things, will you say? That's a good question. What do you know if you learn things every day? Because it messes with what you know. Got to keep moving. That's the key.
Because you can't stop really moving unless you die.
I had this image. I thought of writing something about it called Passing Through Presence. As I was contemplating all this activity that I am involved in and that everyone is involved in, through time, even though we don't know where the time went, but we're on the lookout. And as soon as we know where the time went,
who knows where the time goes?
We'll get back to you. But we're passing through this presence, which is, as I understand, essentially spirit. It's this canvas, this ground of infinite sustainability. It is in and through this that we pass having experiences. Almost like when you look at a sound wave, it goes, there's the bottom of the wave and then the crest of the wave. What do you call it, the draft, the draught? Professor? I don't know either. I can't remember that word, but it's the underside of the wave.
Can really say, what do I know?
What do I know? Sure, I don't know, but it's a good question. We'll have to look it up later.
I just love the idea that it's always in flux. It's always moving. It's never stagnant life. There's something in us yearns for that stagnancy sometimes. We want it to stop. And yet we know if it stops, we're done.
I was in flux once.
Flux, Alabama.
And they had the best Alabama kind of barbecue, and they used to serve it with these hush puppies. And that was in flux. So if you get down to Flux, Alabama, check out their hush puppies.
And to all of you in Alabama, if you live in a place called Flux, please forgive us. We've never been there.
So, listener, you are a hush puppy, in case you didn't know it. If someone asks, what are you? Just say, well, according to Inside Out, I'm a hush puppy. But then you can add, but what do I know?
We don't, because nobody knows what a human hush puppy is.
Well, we got to say goodnight. We want to thank our sponsors, Go Raw and
Universe Spirit.
Universe, go to universespirit.org, Go Raw, go to Safeway, go to Trader Joe's organic section of Costco. And while I'm thinking about it, be sure and go to the organic section of yourself. It is just fresh. Everything about it is fresh, and all those carbon compounds that are part of your organic self are just getting along great, and they're happy that you're carrying that self. But they say, pay more attention to that self. But speaking of pay more attention, I'd like to know, well, what do we need to remember?
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. But what do I know?
I don't know. What do I know? I know. We're glad to be here.
Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on job one for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.